This episode is brought to you by Groove Washer, the best record cleaners and protective sleeves for your vinyl collection. Ask for the Groove Washer from your local shop or go to groovewasher.com. Discount code VinylGuide10. And now, on with the show.
Well, ahoy there, mateys. It's Nate. Welcome to episode 360 of The Vinyl Guide, the podcast for record collectors and music nerds. And man, oh man, we got a great one today. Mr. Nick Oliveri joins us to talk record collecting and much more. Now, Nick, as you know, has a long history of making phenomenal music, from his time in Caius, Queens of the Stone Age, to his current projects, Mondo Generator, Dwarves, and of course, Stoner, who are currently celebrating the release of the album Totally and an upcoming tour of Australia. So, if you're in Melbourne, Frankston, Adelaide, Wollongong, Gold Coast, Brisbane, Canberra, or wonderful wet Sydney, well, damn it, you are in luck. For links to tickets, go to stonerbandofficial.com. They'll also be in New Zealand in early November, Wellington, Christchurch, and Auckland. Stoner is a supergroup with Nick, Brant Bjork, and Ryan Goot, and with Mario Lally of Fatso Jetson and Yawning Man as a tour opener. So there it is. Do not miss it. Hit up stonerbandofficial.com and get them tickets before it's gone for what's sure to be a hazy good time and a dusty next day. Now today, Nick and I talk all about his record collection, and he's unsurprisingly a pretty hardcore collector. Nick has definitely got the vinyl bug and has had it for years. So we talk today about the rare records of his collection, Nick's thoughts on reissues and box sets, his love of multiple forms of music, visiting vinyl shops on the road. Nick gives us updates on bands like Dwarves, Mondo Generator, a new Stoner album in the works, all sorts of stuff we discuss on today's show. And if you like this interview, there's an extended version of it on our Patreon page, patreon.com/vinylguide. So support the show for $5 or $10 a month, whatever you can afford. Help keep our show going, and you get lots of extras, including extended interviews, commercial-free interviews, high-resolution audio files, and much more. That's patreon.com/vinylguide. Please consider becoming a member, and we thank you in advance for your support. And just finally, before we get to the meat of our sandwich today, we've got over 350 other episodes and interviews ready and available anytime by simply following or subscribing to the Vinyl Guide podcast in your podcast app. These episodes include number 359 with Michael Crane of Dead Cross, episode 355 with East Bay Ray of Dead Kennedys, talking all about the rare records and recordings of the band, episode 351 with Brian Baker, talking Bad Religion and Minor Threat Rare Records. Mario Lally shares a ton of great stories of the California desert rock scene in episode 336. Jack and Dino talk Sub Pop and Nirvana Records, episode 334. Brad Logan of Adolescence, Leftover Crack, episode 296. And even Brant Bjork himself, episode 276. And lots, lots more. So subscribe to the Vinyl Guide podcast in your podcast app. Scroll, download, listen, and enjoy. Alrighty, enough of the jibber jabber. Let's get into our vinyl record conversation with Mr. Nick Oliveri.
Hey.
There Hello. He is.
Alright, man. We're going in.
Nick, it's good to see you, man. How you feeling? You've been traveling all over the world. You doing all right?
Yeah, I've been going in, been nonstop since April, pretty much. You know, when everything lifted up again and we could go out and travel, I've been out at it. I've been nonstop.
Yeah, you know, with COVID and just everything locking down, I was thinking of folks like yourself, and there's a few other musicians that are. You know, you just see them on the road. They're involved in so many projects, and all of a sudden, their life just had to go on this big stop. You know, immediate stop. What was that like for you?
I don't know how to sit still, so I had a really hard time. You know, I really fought it at first. You know, for a while, and then I realized, like, well, I kind of got settled in after a while. I was still pretty antsy for the whole time, but. Yeah, I got ants in my pants. I want to get up and move and do stuff and keep going, you know. And so it really was hard for me. And it was hard for a lot of people. It's hard for everybody, really. But, I mean, I really took it hard and personal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
kind of tripping out about it. But I got over it, you know, and kind of just was waiting it out and talking to my booking agent. It's like, look, get me in this new can. Get me it. I asked for it and I got it.
You're making all up for it. You're making up for it. Going all over Europe. I looked at your Australia dates and literally you guys are going for like 2 weeks with maybe a day off. One day
I don't think
off?
Just a day off. I think the day off I filled it in with an acoustic show.
Well, you guys are starting, it's just for those of you who may not know, Stoner Band official. Nick is coming down with his old buddy Brant Bjork and Ryan Goot. Starts October 29th in Victoria, Melbourne. They hit Adelaide, Wollongong. They're coming to Sydney. I'm going to see you guys at the Crowbar and then up to Queensland and then back to Canberra and over to New Zealand. So, yeah, like you said, it's just straight shows every day. No rest for the wicked.
It's going to be great. I love Australia. I love it. I love coming and play there. The people are great, and the shows are always next level.
I was talking to Mario, and this show is about record collecting and that sort of thing. And Mario said, man, you got to talk to Nick. He's got an amazing record collection.
Yeah, I do. I fancy it pretty nice. Yeah, I love it.
Too bad you're never home to enjoy it.
I know, man. When I am, I'm home. I'm listening to some great, great records, and I love it. I love to. I always have something coming in the mail, so I get home and I have a few packages waiting for me, like surprises. Sometimes, you know, like, oh yeah, I forgot I got this.
Yeah.
You know, on a drunken night on Discogs, you know, when I can't go to a record store. But sometimes I go out on tour because over here in Europe you find some great record stores. You can go shopping. Same with Australia. Last time I was down there, I don't know if you guys still have the record stores like you did when I was down there last, but I mean, there's some great stores down there as well. And America's just kind of, we're kind of one now, you know.
Yeah.
We have one in LA, you know. So it's pretty bad.
Yeah, we definitely have. I mean, a lot of record stores did survive the pandemic. Certainly when you get to Sydney, there's Utopia and Vintage Record and Red Eye and a few others that I'm sure you'll enjoy. So talk to us a little bit about your record collection. Like, how would you describe it?
Well, I keep it real nice. You know, I love my records. I probably care for them more than my bass guitar and my guitars and stuff like that. I just love my records. And I have, you know, stuff from like, I love a lot of the mid 80s. Hardcore crossover stuff because that was my era. That's when I was really collecting records as a kid, and so I love that kind of stuff. And I love, you know, everything from Devo to Johnny Cash to, you know, James Brown to you know, Little Richard and Sonics and things like that, and lots of mid 80s stuff. Like I was saying, like COC and Animosity and stuff like that, and just lots of different things. Raw Power and from Italy and BGK from Holland. Like I like a bunch of bands from all over the place. And when I was a kid, I kind of liked to search that out. Different countries and different their best bands. I thought from their countries. You know, I was really into it, and I still am. It makes me feel young. You know, like I collect little figures and records and stuff, and I have a room dedicated to that. You know. Shelves in the room, and it's just getting growing, and pretty soon I might have to go out of that room and get a bigger room.
So you're bringing new records in. Do you ever get rid of records or sell them or anything like that?
I have sold my collection in the past, which was heartbreaking. You know, had some. I haven't been in the Queens for 20 years, so I've had a couple of moments where I had to sell some things. But I make it a point not to sell my records anymore, no matter what. I'd rather go out and work really hard and fill in my off time with solo shows or whatever it takes, you know, and to keep going. The bills didn't stop in the lockdown time, so I'm just trying to get back up to zero so I can start moving again, you know, moving and grooving, you know what I mean? If I can get to zero and I'm almost there, I'll be a good starting point. Below zero, bad starting point. So it's like when you drink and you don't take vitamins the next day. Below zero, bad starting point. So
so
I try to take vitamins.
Do you have some records that people would consider really collectible, some really valuable records in your collection?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. I mean, things to me that I think are really valuable. I mean, the 13 Floor Elevators first record, The mono release, you know, the first pressing, the mono pressing, that's worth quite a bit of money, I think. And I have two of those. I have one of them that's was my ex-wife's dad's, actually. We went to his house, he had it sitting in there. I was like, no way, he's got this. I was the 13-foot elevators. I was like, no way, I didn't know Dale was that cool. And it turned out he was. And I was like, can I have that? He goes, yeah, you can take it. And I was like, what? So it was a great score. And so stuff like that and stuff that maybe isn't worth a whole ton of money, but to me is priceless, like Motorhead, No Remorse with the leather sleeve. That's like, wow, it's something that is just, I cherish these things, you know. So it makes me feel young and it makes me feel, you know, I have the Roar cassette of Bad Brains, you know, it's like an amazing score, you know, it's a cassette, but it's like, you know, they only came out on cassette originally. And so, I mean, I have stuff like that that just like really think is next level for me. And I have some 45s, like a Rock Erickson, you know, the Rhino Records, number two release, the Interpreter and Bermuda, stuff like that. I love it. Black Sabbath Volume 4, which isn't really worth anything to anybody, but it's worth everything to me, you know. I have different pressings from different countries and stuff. Yeah. I'll have like four or five of the same thing. If it's pressed in Portugal, God, I got to get this, you know. There's four extra words at the bottom of this one. This is different than mine. I got to get it, you know. There's some a different thing in the address of the record label on this one. I got to get this too, you know, stupid stuff like that. I get into it, man. I get really, really into it.
I can tell. You know, that's fantastic. So you know all the nerdy details. Like a lot of our listeners, it's like we the same sort of thing. Oh, this label actually has the date on the left side rather than the right side. Yeah. It's worth five times as much as this other.
Yeah. I always look for records that don't have barcodes because that came in a certain year. You normally you have the first pressing of a like a. You have the first pressing if there's not always, but you have a first pressing of a record that came out in the 80s. Sometimes a lot of the hardcore stuff that they didn't have a www.com on there, you know, that came in later. That'd be a repressing and then barcodes too came later too. So if you get like some of the old records that don't have barcodes on them, nine times out of 10, depending on who it is, it's probably an original, you know.
Right.
Definitely an older pressing, definitely. You know?
Yeah. Now, do you take really good care of your records, or they wrote hard and put away wet? What the?
I have some that are snap, crackle, pop, you know, when I play them, but it's kind of add some charm to it. There's some Stones. I have a lot of Stones and lots of Ramones that are, you know, just been overly played and just like, you know. But I even the ones I play a lot, though, I put them in back in the sleeves. I never leave them outside of the record sleeve or put them in different ones, you know, like when you're a kid, you know, just throw it in the pile. I had a record called The Feeders, Ever Feel Like Killing Your Boss, and it had a heavy grade sandpaper glued to the front of it. And if you didn't put your records in the sleeves, it would like get scratched on that and just ruin them. So I always kind of remembered like what that record could do to your other records. So I always put them back into the sleeves and I take really good care of them. And I put them back in the plastic sleeves as well and all that kind of stuff, you know. Okay. I really am making them not nice. So when I want to play them, I can play them. I have a good turntable and I play them and I take good care of them. I put them away when I'm done. Sometimes I do forget and I'll come back and like, oh, shit, I didn't put that record away. When I go to listen to something else. But you have to really what I like about vinyl the most is you're listening to a vinyl, side one ends. You have to you start listening again when you flip it over. Sometimes I'll put on a CD. Oh, shit, it's over. I forgot. I didn't even notice, you know. But you have to start listening again when you put on side two. So you really hear the record and you really listen to it. And you hear how it needs to be played and you hear things you don't hear in digital sometimes. Like there's different things you can hear with the stylus in between the grooves. You're like, whoa, trip out. I have a friend who's got a Monty Python record. It's a double record, but it's eight sides total. Because on each side is two sides. Depending on where the needle hits the groove, there's another groove in there. Oh. And it's two-sided on each side. So it's like a real rare, like, record. It's my friend Black from the Doors. He collects records as well. He's got a pretty awesome collection, too. But he's got these crazy records, you know. Well, some of the other stuff I got it, like Sonics, we have Sonic Booms. I got Boom. I got the original pressings of those, which are pretty sought after and rare to find. You know, the original pressings of those are pretty cool. I love those records. I mean, those are like, I'm they're going down with the ship with me. You know.
Do you remember what your first record was? The one you bought with your own money?
Yes, I do. It was Village People.
Yeah.
I'm just being honest. You know, I could sit here and lie and go, it was Raw Power by the Iggy and the Stooges, but that'd be a lie. And the Sugar Hill Gang. Yep. Well, when I was a kid, rap and it was coming out, and disco was king on the radio. You know, like you played the radio when you're a kid, that you heard, I was 5-6 years old. Then maybe the next year my taste changed, and I heard Kiss, and I was like, whoa, this is it. I got to get into rock and roll. And I really changed my tune of what I like to listen to. The first thing I bought was like, you know, the Village People record and like an EP probably. And I bought the Sugar Hill Gang, or Rapper's Delight EP.
Do you remember really Rapper's Delight? Hip,
yeah.
Hip, don't stop or rock until the
bang, bang, boogie, stay up, jump the boogie, hit the boogie, the beat.
Oh, that's excellent.
Yeah, man, I love it. I love it. And I still listen to that, and I still love it, you know. And so, I mean, there's stuff, you know, I got my KC and the Sunshine Band records as well, you know what I mean? I got all that kind of stuff, man.
Yeah.
I like all of it. You know, if it's good, you can find great music in every genre if you search it out, you know. I'm not saying I listen to every genre, but I religiously listen to rock and roll, and it definitely is my favorite of all time. And, you know, I love Elvis Presley too, and stuff like that. The Beatles, you can't, you know, come on. That's a given. Those bands, well-crafted songs, you know, all over the place. So, I mean, you know, I don't put on the Beatles normally. I have it. If somebody comes over and wants to play it, I have, take your choice, whatever you want to play, I have it. But I don't put them on so much anymore. I don't put on a Led Zeppelin record. I've heard it so much. I love it though. And I would listen to it if somebody came over and put on, you know, any one of them, you know, I love it. Presence is a great record. I mean, there's so many different records and bands that are just AC/DC, you know, forget it. You know, I got all those, you know, the original pressings of those and different album sleeve covers and stuff. I'm really into it. The Rose Tattoo, the Tats, the first record. Wow. Amazing. Fantastic record. Fantastic. There's some great stuff I feel is like really important to me and priceless to me. But maybe somebody else would be like, oh, yeah, I got that. No big deal. And maybe it doesn't go for that much money wise. But in my heart, it's priceless. And these things are like, wow, man, I got vinyl. It's the original pressing. You got to come, you know, let's listen to that. And we'll listen to it. And like, yeah, dude, it sounds way better than in the car on the CD or something.
You know? All right. So you're sitting in your room. You're sitting in your house with all your records around you. And you hear the news that you've got 1 hour until the asteroid hits the Earth. What record do you put on?
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Wow. Volume 4, maybe? Black Sabbath Volume 4? I don't know. I love Sabbath so much. And Tony Iommi's guitar playing, he's just, what a wizard that is, man. You know, his tone, everything about it, it's just so next level. Wow. And Geezer Butler on bass. I'd have to probably say Volume 4. Because it's just so good, you know. It really moves me still, you know, when I hear it. The first thing it did to me when I was a kid, it still does that to me. And, Wow.
Do you get the reissues? Like Volume 4 just came out, this box set, this remix version. Did you pick that up?
I'm going to. No, I haven't got the box sets yet, but I know they've been coming out for a while now. And I'm like, oh, what? It's got all these like outtakes or something on them, I think, and a booklet and all this kind of stuff. And going like, oh, dude, it's going to cost me a mint to get all these, but I'm doing it. So when I can, I'm going to get all of them that I can get, you know. At least those first six. If they do the first six, I got to get those. Technical Ecstasy is good too, though. There's some gems on there, and Never Say Die is great too, man. There's some good stuff on Never Say Die. There's some really good stuff on Never Say Die.
So, are you a completist? Like, for instance, Black Sabbath. Of course, you have the Ozzy years, you got the Dio years. Do you also seek out all the Seventh Star and every release that they have, or can you go?
No. But I do have Born Again with Ian Gillan, and I love that record.
Yeah, I do too. That's a great one. That was the first Black Sabbath I bought with my own money.
And yeah, there you go. Yeah,
I made myself like it because I had to. That was all my money.
That was on the shelf, displayed when I was a kid and I walked into the store. That Tattoo You by the Stones and stuff like that. Those were the records that came out by those bands that were displayed to sell when I walked into the store when I was a little kid. And I was like, whoa, I got to get this, you know?
Yeah.
And those are the first records I bought. Like, you know, I think I got Mob Rules maybe, or it was either that or Trash. I mean, Born Again. And on the shelf that I got with my own money as well. And Tattoo You was my mom would argue that growing some of, you know, Exile is a better record than Tattoo You, but I'm like, no, Tattoo You is my era. I bought that with my own money. I got that first, and I'm not saying the other records aren't total gems, but you know, that's the one I bought when I went into the store myself.
You know, there's something to be said for the record that you had when you were young and the memories of it. Yeah, Tattoo You isn't the best Stones album if you look at it objectively, but if it's the one where you have the most memories of, and it was a formative time of your life, then absolutely, it's
Back in Black. Come on, Back in Black by AC/DC, man. And that's the one that I got first. And went back, you know, went back and got Highway to Hell and found like, whoa, this stuff's just the best shit ever. And but sorry about the language. That's the best stuff ever. And I you know, again, you know, Back in Black was probably the soundtrack to so much of my childhood, what I did first, you know, things I did first. Listening to that, the background at the party and wherever I was, you know, where we had the cassette in the car, you know, you name it, you know, we played that record probably. I can't even figure out what the number would be. There's no way I could do the math on that and figure it out. It's just so many times. And another record I bought when I was a kid that I thought was good was Devo, Freedom of Choice. That was really into, like, Whip It, you know? Because that's when a kid hears that, you're like, oh, whoa, trip, man. this is whoa, you know, this is a trip. You know, you got Kiss, Destroyer, and stuff like that. When I was a kid, I really, really, really was into the Kiss thing, you know? And I guess I got into, like, bands that had costumes on, because I thought the Village People were great for sure. Dad, I want to be the biker for Halloween. He's like, no, you don't want to be the biker. We don't want to be a biker for Halloween. At least not the Village People biker. Okay, Dad, whatever you say, man.
Okay, construction worker. No, not that either.
No, you don't want to be the construction worker.
Hey, so is there a record, is there a title, like if you walk into a record shop that and you see kind of a used, reasonably priced copy of one title, you have to get it? Like, you know, you collect multiple copies of the same one?
Yeah, I have multiple copies of Sabbath records, of Ramones records. I mean, I can't tell you how many Mob Rules records I have. I think my favorite Tony Iommi solo ever is, you know, maybe it would be sacrilege for somebody else to hear this, but is Over and Over Again, the last song on Mob Rules. He does two solos on it, and you can hear Ozzy has this Randy Rhoads, who's just this virtuoso, like, ripping player, and Tony's like, yeah, well, I can do this, and he does some stuff, he does some tricks and stuff that you don't hear him do before, and it's pretty, I mean, it makes my hair grow. I mean, I'm just like going, whoa, man. And second, and that's the first solo. The second solo is just like next level. It gets all squirrely and crazy, and he brings it back. It's just so good, dude.
Yeah.
It's so good. It is. When you get a chance to listen to Over and Over Again off Mob Rules, tell me that's not two of the most ripping solos ever of all time in rock music.
I'm gonna re-listen to that tonight. I tell you, the song Mob Rules is perhaps like the perfect metal song. Like you turn it on and you can't help but to just want to turn the table over and go crazy.
Indeed. Indeed. Yeah. I saw them do the Heaven and Hell tour, and they just opened up with that. I heard it from, we were coming out of the parking lot. I was like, no way, Ronnie. It was great.
So you're in Holland right now. You're going around Europe. You're eventually going to make your way to Australia by way of Los Angeles. That's a crazy trip. Do you spend a lot of time in record stores? Like when you're on the road, do you try to make your way to some of the record shops?
Yeah, especially over here in Europe, there's some great stores, you know, and you can find some great gems that you'd pay like a mint to have imported over there, you know. If you found it online or something, you know, you'd have to pay extra, you know, especially the same with Australia too. Like buying stuff from when you live in Australia must be, geez. Yeah. I mean, I do mail order stuff sometimes whenever I'm at home and I can do it. I do my website. And when I do stuff for Australia, I'm always like, man, the shipping's so expensive for you guys, you know, down there. And it's expensive for us in the States, I thought, you know, but we have that media mail thing with inside of it. But like getting stuff imported from here or from Australia or sending to Australia or sending here from the States, it's cost a mint. So I try to go record shopping just because I like the physical, I like the spending a day going record shopping.
Yeah, it's like anywhere in the world I go, there's a record shop. It's like I'm with my people, right? I mean, that's the crowd.
It's
so the best. Do you come back from tours with like a suitcase full of records from all over the place?
I sometimes have to buy a new suitcase and fill it. I have to get new suitcases to get them home. Like, you know, hopefully I make it small enough to be like a carry-on because you don't want to check them in, you know? So I try to get like a hard case, little thing that rolls and I don't have to carry the weight.
Right.
You know, and if you don't carry mine and try to check in that weight, it's a real thing, you know. That's why I toss money to import stuff, you know. So anyways, I always try to get another suitcase and fill it up. I haven't on this tour because I'm solo on this tour and I'm trying to keep myself low weight so I can get home easy to get to Australia and get on the move, you know. So I did buy some records. I have like 10 records I've gotten, but I'm trying not to get more. But I'm going to Deventer, and I hear they got a good record store there, but I don't know. And I know Berlin. I got that coming up. It's on my birthday. I'm probably gonna want to go get myself a birthday gift.
Of course. Yeah,
I'll say it from somebody else. You know, look, I got this gift from my friends.
What's the most expensive record you've ever bought for yourself?
We'll be back after these messages.
Hey everyone, I'm here to talk to you about Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips. Ever find a record in a used bin where the vinyl is gorgeous, but the sleeve has this ugly split and is even falling completely apart? Well, that's okay. Grab it anyway, because with Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips, you can fix that right up. Seems Easy record repair strips repair seam splits from the inside, so it doesn't affect the appearance of a record sleeve, but it does make it functional again. With Seems Easy, records can now slide in and out like new. Turn a $5 used record into a $50 functioning collectible. Just ask your local record shop for Seems Easy strips, and if they're not in stock, go to seamseasy.com. That's Seems Easy with 2 Z's. Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips. Seems easy because it is. Oh, and hey, record nerds, don't forget to clean your records with the very best and safest record cleaner, the Groove Washer. Make your records look and sound their very best and store them with confidence using the new Groove Washer Groove Guard record sleeves. You gotta try this out. It makes a huge difference to the quality of your vinyl experience. Ask for the Groove Washer by name at your local record store and accept no substitutes. Or head over to groovewasher.com and use discount code VINYLGUIDE. 10.
All hail the Groove Washer.
That's groovewasher.com, discount code VINYLGUIDE10.
Now we return to the program, already in progress.
No limits. What's the most expensive record you've ever bought for yourself?
Oh, wow. I guess... I I did pay about $400 for a Sonics record once.
Okay.
We are the Sonics. I paid $400 for it. And that was a lot of money to drop on one record. And I was like, I would go up to, I paid that for that same price though, for like 45s, little 7-inch 45s, some punk rock stuff. And I may have done $1,000 once on a record. I can't remember who it was, but that's about as far as it goes. It was a 45 and it was just, but I have a problem spending. I shouldn't spend stuff like that, but I sometimes could spend it on a lot worse things, you know? Yeah. And so I look at it like that. And you know, if I'm going to blow the money, you know, I might as well blow it on something that is good and it doesn't harm me. It makes me feel young and it doesn't age me any.
And that you'll have tomorrow.
It's like a fountain of youth for me, you know, compared to anything else I would spend money on. So it's a good thing, you know, it's a good thing, you know. It's a very positive thing, and it's collectible. I take good care of my stuff, so you know, one day when I'm gone, at least you know my people that are around me, my family, all hey, he wasn't a total nothing. He left this record collection for us, you know. So I won't leave nothing behind. He'll leave this great collection, you know, and be like, see, I told you guys, I wasn't all nothing. from somewhere below or above, I don't know where. I told you. I'll leave you something. Wasn't nothing. So at least I'll have a record, some vinyl to leave behind. I'm like, I can't carry all this weight. What do you leave this stuff to us for? You know, they'll get the goodwill to come pick it up, not knowing what it is.
Well, I think it's fair to say when you get buried, when they lower you in, you're going to have at least one of those copies of Volume 4 with you.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. For sure. You know it.
Yeah, because look, I just looking at your career and the different projects you've been involved in, and especially with some of the reissues that are coming out now with on Heavy Psych, I could tell, you know, vinyl is you're into the details there, and having your materials on vinyl is important to you, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I really like it to be collectible if it can, and I want it to be. You know, the different pressings I think should have something a little different, changes on them. You know, like at the cover or something that you can tell the difference between different pressings. I like that kind of stuff. It's like little details like that make it like, oh, this is the first pressing, you know. And that's key. I mean, sometimes, you know, people don't know to look at matrix numbers and stuff like that, you know. So I know all that kind of stuff. And I get into it, you know. I really am into the details. And so I try to do that with our stuff, especially Mondo. I try to do that. And but Dwarf stuff that I'm on, it's very – there's all kinds of different variations of the records and stuff. There's different of the same one. There's always a different like sleeve or a different this, different that, and different pressings. And I really get into that. And Blag being a record collector too, he is as well. So there's different things, you know, that are pretty important to me. And records are definitely one of them. And so having stuff be collectible is great. And you know, it's easy. Like, why isn't the Beatles records worth so much? Well, I mean, because there's so many of them, you know, it's just so many of them. It's worth a lot to the people that own them in their hearts. But you get an old Minor Threat 45 that there's only like, you know, whatever, 350 pressed, and that's it. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's going to be worth a lot of money. You know, like Bad Brains first. I think the Bad Brains first 45, two songs, $10,000 if it has the album sleeve cover on it. Without the sleeve, it's $6,000. Like, I ain't paying that. I don't have that. And if you did, who's going to buy that? You know? Misfits. I have a couple of Misfits records that are worth some money, I guess. They're worth quite a bit. But I got them and they were not worth, I mean, when they were regular price, but I think they're worth something now.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Oh, and Misfits are going crazy. Does it make you kind of wonder? Because some of these records, like the Misfits record, I would imagine you probably paid $10 or less for them, and they're now worth thousands.
Well, I paid something like 10 or 12 bucks, like, but I don't have Walk Among Us original. That's worth like you know, I think $3,000, $5,000 or something crazy, you know. So I'll never get that original copy.
You know? Yeah. So you said there were a couple times where you sold your record collection, but it sounds like you did keep some of the records from your youth. You didn't sell them all. You kept some of them, yeah?
Yeah. Didn't sell them all. I sold the ones I knew were like Queens of the Stone Age stuff. Mm-hmm. That stuff was actually worth quite a bit. And I lived on some of those records for a while. And I mean, I had everything we'd ever done, every single thing, you know, and every Caius thing we had ever done and stuff like that. I mean, and tour stuff. And those were the things that were actually, I was getting some good money for. And so I actually sold them and I feel bad about it. 'Cause I wish I had that stuff now. I mean, I don't listen to it so much anymore. Somebody put on the, you know, I wouldn't tell somebody to turn it off, but I'm proud of all that stuff. But, you know, I used to listen to that stuff when we would make it, you know, and we're listening to the mix stuff. And of course, you know, but yeah, some great records, and there's some different presses that were worth quite a bit. And I sold them.
Do you still have a copy of the Dog Food 7-inch?
I do. I have a leather sleeve one that my friend at home made for it as well. We did a couple of different versions with leather sleeves on them, a white leather sleeve, and we put leather patch inside of it and all this kind of stuff, mm-hmm. you know. And we did a red sleeve too, and put a patch in there and handwritten lyric sheets and stuff like that. We would do with these leather sleeves we would make, and pretty cool. We were doing that there for a while, and I didn't know it was going to be recognized on Discogs, but it actually got recognized on Discogs because we did numbered editions, like how many we were going to do, you know.
Yeah.
And I need to do that again because it's kind of fun, you know, yeah. kind of cool.
Making something special. Well, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, totally.
That's cool. Now, when you guys are coming down here to tour, you guys bring vinyl on tour? Is there vinyl on the merch table?
Oh, yeah. We always have to bring our vinyl with us. We did two Stoner records in the lockdown time. And so totally already came out. We have another one that's mixed and mastered and ready to go. And it's called Boogie Down to Baja. And that's going to come out, I believe, January or February. Wow. I'm not too sure. But, yeah, we have another one that's in the can ready to go in the hopes that, like, we would be able to just keep going and staying out on the road, you know.
Right.
And not have to stop to do the break to live. And
yeah. So Stoner seems to be a full-time focus now. I mean, it seems to be perhaps your primary band. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, well, yes, it has been this whole past year. That's what we kind of set out to do was, let's do this thing. Let's do it and keep it rolling, you know. Like, we did the live in the Mojave Desert thing, and the day before we went and did that, we recorded Stoner's Roll, which is very, very, very raw. Like, we didn't do any overdubs of any kind on it. We just went in and did it in Brant's old house, you know. We just recorded it in there, and it turned out really cool. I mean, but it's raw. The songs, we knew them for 4 days. We had 5 days to get these songs ready for a live performance, mm-hmm. Video and all stream and stuff. So Brant called me, and I went there, and before he could say, "Would you want to jam?" I was already on my way over to his house, you know, so I was so ready to play, you know. So we had put these songs together, arranged them. Brant had a bunch of parts. I had a couple parts and Goot, and we all put these songs together, and we recorded them the day before we did the live stream, which is 4 days old, these songs. Mm-hmm. So it was quite cool, and you can hear it's very raw, and it totally was done much different we all brought in as much material as we could, and Goot and Brant did the guitar and drums live while I was out on tour with the Dwarves.
Right.
But I wanted to be there for that initial hit, but I have a bunch of riffs and songs that are on the record, and so that's good. And on the next one coming out too, and we co-wrote a lot of the stuff. Everything's co-written on the new stuff, and I think you can hear it a little bit more than on the first one. That it's not as it's more planned out, thought out, and we're playing as a band much better together. And mm-hmm. really something you can really hear, I think, from Stoner's Roll to Totally. We're originally going to call the band the Blonde Lebanese, which is a strain of hashish, I think.
Okay.
And I was like, how about call the band Stoner? And Goot goes, yes, we'll call it Stoner. And it was kind of like a no-brainer. It would seem like it was like the right name for the band. Mm-hmm. And of course, with the umlauts on there, it kind of makes it something else. But it's, we mean it as a, you know, a rock and roll thing. Like, it's Stoner.
The umlauts Stoner, go for Stoner. The long O, so Stoner. Stoner, I think.
Stoner, man. Stoner, Stoner. So it's, you know, we're trying to do, you know, just try to be like the rock thing to do by putting them there, and it kind of is cool, you know. Mm-hmm. It's cool. It looks good. It looks good. Yeah, but we wanted to go with that whole, you know, we wanted to go. I think for Brant Bjork, to me is Stoner rock. Like, when I think of Stoner rock, it first thing comes to mind is Brant Bjork. That's what pops in my head when I think Stoner rock. So
yes,
I think it was the perfect name for a band we're in together.
So a band like Stoner, the crowds that you have, I would imagine are a little bit more mellow than, say, Blood Clot.
Oh yeah. But we get a pit going sometimes. We bust out some oldies but goodies as well. We don't mess around. We come out. And we want to give them what they want, you know, mm-hmm. and also give ourselves what we want too. And we want that as well. We want to rock a couple oldies too in there. We want to jam as much cool new stuff as that we are playing. It's super good as a band, and we got some fat on some of the new stuff. Like the new record will be coming out. There's, we have a hardcore song that's fast, and we get a pick going, you know, we rock it out, and we have some long jam songs, and we have some short, more focused songs, and we have some heavy stuff, and we switch from vocalist to vocalist, and,
right.
and we're going back and forth, and we're really going in and doing it to it, and having a good time doing it too. Yeah, we think we got a good bunch of songs that'll be coming out in the future too. So, I really love doing Stoner. I think it's a great band, and you know, and whenever I get burnt out on that, I go and I do something else for a while, and I come back and do it. Like I'm doing right now. I'm like, this is great. I'm missing Stoner again. This is good. I miss Stoner. Can't wait to go do it in Australia. It's gonna be great.
That's good. You get to balance it all now. Yeah. In your career, you've gone on stage in so many different environments, and there's definitely been some crazy shows that you've had to play. Talk to me about a show that really got out of hand. Was there any shows that you felt lucky to be able to get out of there in one piece?
There's been some dwarves moments, you know, that's been like, oh, whoa, man, we got to get out of here. Not yet.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's been some, you know, George's track record kind of speaks for itself. And there's been some moments where, you know, I wasn't even in the band. And I remember we were on tour with them, Caius. George took Caius on our first tour, national tour. And we go out, we're in like Arizona. And this guy, some guys keeps jumping on stage and trying to hit, you know, the guy with the mask, and he cannot be named, and he swings his guitar at him or something crazy, and then this fight breaks out, and the dwarves knock over all their gear and try to leave the stage, and everybody in the crowd comes and grabs like a cymbal, a drum, a guitar. They start stealing all their stuff.
Oh, God.
It was at like a warehouse somewhere. Like, it wasn't even like a club. It was like, hey, come play our party warehouse, you know? And it was like, totally like there's no way you would have gotten this stuff back, you know? So I grabbed this guitar back from this guy, and I turned around and I set it down. And as soon as I'm turning my head around, like fast motion, this guy's fist is already like laying right at my grill. Bam!
Oh, man.
I gotta say, that hurt pretty hard. I was like, whoa, and everybody, and then we kind of like just struggling around with each other. And it was like, don't mess with Frank, man. Don't mess with Frank. I'm like, who's Frank? I don't know. I'm trying to get my friend's guitar back. I wasn't even in the band at the time. I was in Caius, you know. We're all trying to get their gear back from these guys that are ready to fight for their stolen gear they just stole, you know.
Yeah.
They're ready to kill you for the gear they just stole from the dwarves. And like, give me that back. It's theirs, man. You know, so that was a pretty out of hand show. I mean, I kind of felt like, and there was a bunch of them that were against and wanting to take their stuff, and and they're all gone. It's just the Caius guys standing up for them. Like, we're going to take their stuff back to them. We're gonna, you know, like, what am I doing here? What's going on? So, you know, those guys are like, who knows where they're out the back door and gone, you know,
right.
Who cares about our gear? Let's just save our own lives and let them die.
Sounds like they're used to that. That wasn't the first time that happened to them.
I've been backing them up for a lot of years, and I don't know why. I love them. They're my friends. But I had to stop doing that stuff for them, because, you know, they kind of mellowed out. They're so mellow now. I mean, they put on a great, great rock, punk rock show, you know, and I've been part of that for since 1993. I mean, I've been in that band for 30 years and this next year. And so we just did 28 songs in the studio, me and Doc Josh Freeze. We're doing the first George double album. We just did 28 songs in 2 days, me and Josh Freeze on drums and me on bass, and we killed it. It was great, and just you know, just killed it, and brought in a bunch of songs for it, and everybody did, Mark Diamond, and it just turned out great, man. And Blags re-released all the vinyl of it, got back the Sub Pop catalog. He got some gatefolds and 45 RPM, so that's because they're so short, you know, it's a better sound quality. He's doing these cool packaging, these cool records on his own label, and he got the Sub Pop catalog back, like I said, different covers from the same photo shoots, and just cool stuff, you know, and collectible things, and so that's going to be a new cool thing to have on the merch stand for the Dwarves, and for a record collector would be the new Dwarves, like, you know, Blood Guts and Thank Heaven and Sugar Fix, all with different covers from the same photo shoots, and gatefolds with liner notes and stuff, and lyrics and things like that, and colored vinyls, and then our new double album, which will be called The Dwarves Keep It Real. But R-E-E-L, real, you know.
when do we see that?
That's going to be in the new year as well. So I've heard the mixes, and they sound fantastic. You know, I'm really, really, really proud of the new Dwarf stuff. And I have a few good songs on there that are my own, and some co-write stuff. And Blag's new tunes are amazing. And Mark Diamond, like I said, wrote some great songs. And Josh Freeze as well. Mm-hmm. So there's some good tunes on there, and we're very proud of it. And it's going to be good. It's going to be really good. And I think people are going to be stoked to have more than a 15-minute record.
I got to get Blag on the show. I saw he has a new solo album.
Oh, yeah. He's got a few new songs. He's got, and I just did a video with him for it. It's called Ralph Champagne.
Yeah. This is like the I Love Lucy kind of thing.
He's reinvented himself. Yeah, we did a new video. It's so good, man. It's going to be so good. So good. It's called Your Girlfriend by Ralph Champagne. And I'm not on the recording itself, but he wanted me in the video, and we beat each other up in the video. Just like, by the end of the video, we're all black eyed and bloodied, but we're friends again, you know? So good.
That's fantastic. All right. So that's an ongoing. Well, let's talk about the albums that are coming. We know Stoner's out. We know a new Stoner's coming out. It sounds like new Dwarves are coming out. Anything new from Mondo Generator in the new year?
Yes, there will be. We are making, we're scheduled to go in the studio at the end of January. Mondo Generator, we're making a new record. So that's set to be done by the end of January. We'll have a new record. Mm. Don't know the title for it yet. Haven't planned that, thought that out yet. But we will have a new Mondo Generator in the new year, and tours, and hopefully come down under as well.
Absolutely. Well, look, Nick, you've been very generous with your time, and I really do appreciate you spending some moments with us nerding out with records. Let's say you walk into a record store today, or you come to Australia, you walk into a record store. What's something that you hope is there that you could take home with you?
Well, you know, I don't really have something that's particular in mind that I want to go get right now, but I do have the incredible Simon Stokes and the Black Whip Thrill Band, which is the first American release of a band that was the band cover got banned. It's just a drawing, you know, but Simon Stokes, he died. I think he was 84 years old, and he passed away last year, I think 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And he was a great guy. He was fantastic. He wrote songs his whole life. He was an underground hero, and like the Cramps covered Miniskirt Blues. He wrote that. Iggy Pop sings on it on the Cramps record. I think, like, Look Mom, No Head, I think it's on that record, and the Cramps. And so he was an underground, you know, just cult classic guy. And I did some music with him, and he was great. But check out Simon Stokes if you want. And then also I was in Australia once. I found a Kraftwerk record, Autobahn.
Yep.
And they happened to be on the Big Day Out tour. We were on with the Queens, and so I was met these guys, and I said, "Hey, I just got Autobahn on Vertigo Records, Australia pressing. Can I would you sign it?" And I don't have any records signed. I know they don't get records signed. And the guy took it and turned it this way, and he wrote his name up one of the lanes, and he handed it to the other guy, because that's the same on the back cover. He flipped it over and he wrote his name on one of the lanes, and he gave it to the other guy flipped over the front, wrote it on the other lane, going the other direction. And the other guy wrote it on the other lane, going the other direction. It was like perfectly German style. Like, dude, whoa, that's like perfectly perfect. Like, you know, like it couldn't have been planned out better. So that's kind of a cool score I got. Just didn't know I was getting a score. Like, dude, what? Kraftwerk's pretty, a very original band for sure, without a doubt. I mean, super original. I mean, whether you like it or not, you can't deny, like, it's undeniably different and good in its own way, you know. And so that's pretty amazing about it. You know, they made their own instruments, you know, just pre-digital music, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like a ministry. Mine's a terrible thing to taste for like that style of music, what it did. Like, it sounds like it's done on Pro Tools, but nope, he was doing tape edits and cuts, and like, what? It's just a perfectly digital sounding analog record. Yeah. Like, how the hell do you do that, you know? And these guys would make their own instruments and do something totally unique and different. Whether you like it or not, like I said, it's undeniably different and original.
I was actually at that show in Sydney, the Big Day Out, and Kraftwerk was there. You guys were there. I forgot who else was. I think White Stripes were on the bill, and a few.
I think others. So, yeah.
And Kraftwerk, they're like my Beatles, right? I mean, in terms
she's
of
a model and she's look.
Computer World. When I was young, Computer World just blew my mind. It still does. I mean, just what those guys do. Yeah. They write their own software. They do these sort of things that are just, you know, I mean, unheard of. So, yeah, true pioneers. I absolutely agree.
Yeah, man, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
Well, Nick,
we're watching it all unfold.
Nick, thanks again for making the time for us. And again, I want to remind folks that Stoner is coming down to Australia. Go to stonerbandofficial.com. If you're in Victoria, Melbourne, Frankston, Adelaide, Wollongong, of course, Sydney, I'll be at the Crowbar. Anyone's going to be at the Crowbar, DM me on social medias and we'll do a beer or two. They're going up to the Gold Coast, Brisbane, back down to Canberra, and then over to New Zealand for a few shows. And again, this is Nick. It's Brant Bjork, Ryan Gut, Mario Lolly. Yeah, you may know him from Yawning Man and Across the River and Fatso Jetson.
Fatso Jetson.
Yeah, he's on the opening slot there. So get there early.
You know the Rubber Snake Charmers, Mario Lolly's Rubber Snake Charmers, if I may real fast, is Ryan Gut on drums, Brant Bjork on guitar, Mario Lolly on bass and vocals, and also lead vocals is Sean Wheeler. And I kind of sit in and do a couple some background stuff as well, just because I'm there and I'm having a good time.
If you want, yeah.
we're sharing a band, but it's different music for sure. It's a lot of it's improv on the spot too, so it's pretty cool.
Fantastic. Yeah. All right, well, we look forward to the shows. Please travel safe, Nick. Take care of yourself, and we'll see you down under, man.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, cheers.
Later, brother.
See you. Man, what a sweet guy. Nick Oliveri, I'll have him on the show any day of the week. Fascinating, fun to talk to. And he's involved in so many different projects. Mondo Generator, Dwarves, solo stuff, Stoner, which I hope a lot of you in Australia and New Zealand are going to consider enjoying over the next few weeks. Tickets, stonerbandofficial.com. If you're in and around Sydney for their Sydney date, give me a DM. Maybe we'll do a beer or two at the bar. That's going to be a great show. And make sure to get there early because Mario Lolly and their collective band is going to be the opener. And again, don't forget, we've got an extended version of this interview with Nick at patreon.com/vinylguide. Please consider becoming a patron of the show. That would be most awesome and excellent. And you get lots of extras with that too. That's patreon.com/vinylguide.
And that's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please share these episodes on your social media. Put them on Facebook, tweet them out on Twitter. Share it with your friends. Help them figure out how to get a podcast on that smartphone of theirs. It's not completely intuitive, and some people need a hand, so make sure to ask them if they know about The Vinyl Guide, your record collecting buddies. If they don't, just show them how to rock it up, and it's something they can listen to in their vinyl downtime. We're putting together more episodes, and we'll have a next one out soon, so until we talk next time, get out there and buy some records, people. Cheers.